Good evening. We're ready to begin. And up first is Rural Library, please. Go ahead.
Go ahead. All right. The rural libraries in the towns of Dryden, Groton, Newfield, Lansing, and Ulysses serve a wide range of needs and residents with information, materials, and resources. We provide programming, internet and computer access, Wi-Fi services, and personal assistance with information needs. But we've become much more than that. For each of our towns, we're the center of community life and provide for needs beyond basic information resources. These rural libraries also look to many of the unseen needs in our communities. In Groton, the library has become a central location for food insecurity issues and nutritional education. This library spearheaded a monthly community meal and food hub at the library in collaboration with Cornell Cooperative Extension and has been a summer lunch site for several years. Newfield Public Library instituted a cooking program for teens and works with the local food pantry and as a pickup site for summer produce. Dryden also participated with the USDA summer lunch program to provide nutritious meals for children in need. Our libraries also tackled social justice issues and critical issues of concern with programs and conversations on human rights, climate change, race, and equality. The Ulysses Philomathic Library in Trumansburg has opened discussions with community reads and programming on gender rights, identification, and tolerance. They were also able to take a momentous step and eliminated overdue fines for their materials through some bullet aid funding. Our libraries seek collaboration with local and national agencies and our local universities as well and serve as a connection point. The Southworth Library in Dryden has collaborated with national and local agencies and the universities to create programs for all audiences and encourage dialogue and participation in their community. One such program brought together the town historians, local history centers, and the five rural libraries to explore women's suffrage in New York from a rural perspective. The resultant panels will be on display at each of the libraries, at the History Center of Tompkins County, and at Cornell University's Mann Library throughout the year. Southworth was also selected as a NASA at My Library site, a three-year competitive grant from NASA and the American Library Association to explore science, space, and technology, including Eclipse 2017 programs with Cornell Space Science Partners, as well as a Pushing the Limits initiative for climate change and local resiliency. So if you ask any librarian, if you just mention, do you have Eclipse glasses, we will all scream. We serve as a central nervous system for all of our communities and local organizations. In the past year, Newfield Public Library added programming for seniors, family and community movie nights, a teen advisory group, and works collaboratively with the local food pantry, community council, and recreation department. Besides offering programming for families and teens, many of the libraries also provide youth employment opportunities for teens as well as job training. We actively engage in preserving the past history of our communities and secure the present needs of our neighborhoods, but we're also planning for the future, from our technology needs to demands on our physical space. Lansing is in the very beginning stages of planning a new building at a new location across the street, working with the town and the state on the best way to move forward with this project within the next 5 years. The current building will then be given back to the town to be used as a rec center. Newfield Public Library recently added additional open hours to better meet the needs of their community and is looking forward to expanding their collaboration efforts with local community groups. The services of the Finger Lakes Library System is the vital link that connects all of our libraries. As part of the consortium, we obtain technical support, interlibrary loan services, and networks to the state system, national concerns, and library trends. Through their assistance, we put the one-card system in place, which allows the use of any of the 34 member library cards at any location in any library in the system. The interlibrary loan services connect all the libraries in a tangible way through the transport system they provide. They recently had to replace one of the vehicles used for their transport after several months where over $7,000 of repairs were needed. They received $37,500 from Senator O'Meara in his Bullet A distribution, which enabled them to purchase the van without requiring any OTR requests from this county. Thank you. The service of interlibrary loans enabled the transportation of the loan of almost 87,000 items just for the five rural libraries this year to date. So these were the recommended budget figures. It reflects a 2% increase to the amount given to the libraries last year, though the decrease that you see indicates the total amount that we are asking for without the OTR, the one-time OTR last year that was requested of $7,500 and received for digital items. So that funding was given to accommodate the growing digital needs and platforms that we receive, that we offer to all the libraries in the system. While library services, programming, and computer use continue to serve our communities, the popularity and increased use of digital formats has been robust. We have digital downloads for audiobooks and ebooks with the OverDrive, digital magazine downloads, and streaming for music, books, and videos. Since 2016, over 200,000 items have been checked out from the digital platforms, with the five rural libraries accounting for 13% of that total. So while library use for traditional resources has not significantly decreased, we face the challenge of providing for our digital customers as well, with budgets that are stretched. We struggle to maintain a fair wage for our staff with increasing minimum wage standards and living wage initiatives. And library services continue to gain complexity due to the rapidly changing technology that we use. We have to maintain not only our physical equipment and the digital environment, but the knowledge base required for staffing. That balance, which is important to us, between local friendly service and technological expertise requires increased staff time and training. Many of our staff members are part-time and employed elsewhere as well, so we struggle to devote the time and the expertise required to keep them up to date. So, a reminder that good libraries build services, great libraries build communities, and we thank you very much for your support for the rurals.
Thank you very much. Would you please... Both give us your names for the record.
Oh, so sorry. My name's Diane Pamel. I'm the director at Southworth Library.
I'm Sarah Glagowski. I'm the executive director of the Finger Lakes Library
Thank
System.
You. Anyone have any questions for these two people? Mike.
I just have two. The Hoopla program, how successful has that been? Do you know?
Extremely successful. Yes, we launched it last summer. What we see our patrons use it for is a wide variety. We thought it was going to be just really for streaming movies because we weren't offering a streaming movie service, but it also offers books, ebooks. And what is really popular also is graphic novels. There's really not an online source for graphic novels, so we're seeing a wide range of usage from Hoopla, not just the streaming movie service.
My other question is, I have a family, or a number of families, actually, that use those passes that you have, like so they go to the museum.
Museum passes,
for
yep.
Free. But they said they couldn't go to the science museum. Is there any reason that isn't a thing?
The downtown, the Science Center, yes. So this was a grant that was received by the Cuga Nature Center and PRI, so it's a grant cycle. The Science Center, we have worked, I know Annette, yes, they can speak also on the matter.
Hi, I'm Annette Birdsall. I'm currently the director of the Trumansburg Library. We did approach the Science Center, and they said they already have a program in place for low-income folks to use their resources, so they weren't interested in partnering with the library at this time. We would always be happy to explore that again. Thank you.
Thanks.
Martha, Will, and Rich.
Thanks, Jim. Hi, I'm curious. So you've got there are five libraries, and you each get the same amount of money. I'm looking at in our book, pages, section 43 to 45. So but you'll each get the same amount, $33,000 and change, and the Finger Lakes system gets $24,600.
That's correct.
Where does that formula come from? Is that? Any idea?
Do you remember the history of all
Yeah,
that?
I do. In the past, and I'm not sure quite how long ago, but each library received a different amount, and we all made separate cases for it. But because the rural libraries each serve a town in Tompkins County, we agreed as a group to ask for the same funding and then look to other resources to supplement our own budgets to allow for differences in our communities.
Thanks, Annette. But the Finger Lakes system...
We receive funding currently from three out of the five counties that we serve or provide services for, and it's just in line of what we've previously asked for. We obviously are in a unique position because we want our libraries funded also, but we would like some county money to support our services because, as Diane spoke, we do offer the robust delivery system and interlibrary loan, so that's why we do ask for county money each year. We just want our libraries also funded in an equitable way, too.
So if, and I hear that we gave a total of $7,500 last year for all of you.
That was split, yes, and then we received that to purchase the e-content materials for those libraries.
Okay. I'm going to ask you to come back to us with what would you do with, wow, let's go crazy and make that $15,000. So, one-time money. If we were to add that, I mean, it's a decent amount of money when you look at all six of you, but then you spread it out.
Yes, definitely. I would say the number one need would be e-content. That is a struggle for our libraries to incorporate into their budgets. So anything extra we get would service everyone in our community. So,
okay. Part of the challenge and the reason we asked for that OTR last year is because as these platforms came online, our budgets didn't have time to adjust to that because, as I said, we still have the same expectation and requirements for all our other materials. This is just added on top of it. So it was extremely helpful for that. And we just continue to each of us try and figure out how to add a little more to the e-content, but it's taking from one to pay the other. So,
okay. So I'll take that as that's your response. If there's anything else that anybody wants to propose for, I'm just going to put out there $15,000 and let us know.
Will.
Thank you, Jim. I would support that as well. I think you guys do great, great things. I am curious. I mentioned the project in Ulysses to basically have a no fee for overdues. Is that, and that's privately funded? Is that time limited, or is it
I'll have Annette answer. She is the current director of Trumansburg.
Hi. I had been working on going fine free for 5 years, and our board was completely supportive of that because it really is a social justice issue. Yeah. And their answer was, that sounds great. How will you get the funding? And we were able to reduce the amount we took in fines, which started at about $10,000 to about $5,000 when the auto-renew feature was introduced, so books were automatically being renewed. And then we were halfway through the year this year and had taken in quite a bit of money and then asked Senator O'Mara for just this year. And what we believe is that because people understand the inequity that if you have the money, you just pay your fines, that in coming years, our membership fees will increase substantially to keep covering this cost. So we hope this is fine free forever.
Okay. And has this changed people's inclination to return books in a timely way, or is it a...
Right. That's, we always have a balance between access and stewardship. And so stewardship occurs because they still get their overdue notice. They get their reminders and, you know, their checkout slip, then their overdue. And then after 30 days, then they would be charged replacement cost if the books weren't returned. But the important thing to remember is that people that are low income or who have complex lives that don't allow them to get to the library in the same way that you might expect comparing, you know, one-income households, you know, of, yeah, I don't know even now how many years now. We already have people who return their books late. They just get to pay the fines. So we don't really expect to see any substantial increase in overdue books. People will still share the materials because we respect libraries and love them so much. And we're, that is just being borne out so far. But it's early days. This only happens September 1st.
Well, thank you for the explanation. And I hope that maybe if it works, continues to work, that could be expanded through the other libraries. Sounds like
Me
a
too.
Great idea.
Yeah.
Some of our libraries in the Finger Lakes Library System are fine free. We do work with the libraries and their boards especially to educate them that they should not be relying on fine money in their budget to balance their budget. So it is something that we hope that grows. And the publicity that has been brought upon the situation with Ulysses going fine free, I think, has been a benefit and shown our other libraries that it is doable.
Thank you.
Rich.
I just wanted to say thanks for your good work, and we're getting so much pressure from New York State on shared services and working together, and you guys are really doing it well. So I just wanted to say that. So.
Thank you. Yes, I think all of our libraries, especially in this community, really work well and really collaborate and partner with each other and are very cognizant of partnerships and collaboration. And I see it with summer reading. I see it with adult book groups, you know, all sorts of the science programs that our libraries do. So it's evident in the day-to-day running of the libraries.
Mike.
Nice presentation, ladies. I wondered if we might have the representatives from the other libraries introduce themselves. There are people here in the audience who might be sitting around this desk next year and might like to see who they are.
Hi, I'm Susie Gutenberger. I have been running the Lansing Community Library since they started 9 years ago. It's in 2 weeks, I'll have been there for 9 years, and that's how old our library is, pretty much. Thank you. And in Lansing, I wanted to say that what we've done for families as far as trying to go fine free is that on board books, picture books, easy readers, anything in our J or easy reader or E sections, including DVDs, family DVDs, have all gone fine free. So if a family gets sick and they've got 20 picture books at home and two movies, they don't have to worry that, you know, everybody's sick and they can't get into the library to return them. They may have a $20 fine after that. So we are, in Lansing, we take that very seriously, and we are working towards trying to get to be fine-free, and we're doing as much as we can for the families. So, thank you.
Anyone else? Go ahead, please.
Hello, I'm Tammy Kubinick. I'm the director at the Newfield Public Library. And just to chime in on the fine-free situation, Newfield is also working toward being fine-free. For many years, all of our children's materials have been fine-free. We are still finding adult materials and DVDs and media, but for the reasons that Susie stated, you have families that take out 20 or 30 items, and one day overdue or a week overdue can be really detrimental to a pocketbook. And so we have been committed to that for many years at this point.
Anyone else?
Sarah Knobel from Groton is on a much-deserved vacation this week. But the one thing I can say about Groton, if you aren't aware, Groton is going for an expansion of their building. They have the land donated already, and they are working with the Finger Lakes Library System. They just secured a New York State construction grant that Finger Lakes then gives out, and they will be adding on to their programming space and their youth space, which is much needed. If you've ever been in the Groton Public Library after school and are trying to use a quiet area to study or work or have a conversation, it's virtually impossible because of the heavy usage they get after school. So we're really excited that they're going to get this expansion over the next year. So we're working with them on that.
And I just wanted to say, I don't want to steal anybody's thunder, but Annette keeps saying that she's currently the Ulysses director. And as we all know, she has been selected by our Tompkins County Public Library Board of Trustees to be the next director. Congratulations.
Thank you both, and thank you to all the rural libraries for the good work you continue to do.
Thank you for letting us come.
TCPL, please. Susan Curry.
Well, hello. I'm not sure which one to speak in. I'll speak in this one. Just a shout out to the rural libraries. We service the Central Library for the Finger Lakes Library System. So we have a double charter. We're chartered to serve the entire county of Tompkins County, but we also, as the Central Library, serve all 33 libraries in five counties with a population of more than 313,000. All of these libraries are essential to their neighborhoods. There's nothing more important than our county libraries and the neighborhood, being a neighborhood library where children can walk to their library easily after school. So, and they do an amazing job. You know, whoop, whoop. Thank you for the opportunity to meet with you tonight. I also want to thank our trustees. We have some members of our Board of Trustees, and we have Sarah O'Shea, who's the head of our youth services. And I also was going to welcome Annette, who will be our new library director in a few weeks. She and I have already begun working. We've known each other a while. Couldn't be happier. This is my very last budget presentation. I'd like to take the opportunity to thank all of you for your support of the community and the county. It's been an honor to be the library director at this incredible community resource. We have an amazing county public library, and much of it is thanks to your support. So again, I like to start with thanks, because I'd like for you to see where your money went last year. Thank you very much for the 2017 support and the budget that included the halftime librarian for our new digital lab and makerspace. We hired Ben Eckley, who came from the Ithaca High School, and Ben's new title is Digital Futures Librarian at Tompkins County Public Library. As a result of your support, Ben arrived just in time to help us navigate the technology needs of our new spaces, and he's been a tremendous asset already. We know that he's going to be invaluable to our community as they explore the new services. We also have new public computers after 5 years. They've been very welcomed by the public. I like this picture of Ezra Cornell because, Ezra was the founder, and I thought it pretty fitting that he was looking out over the carpet removal back in February. So thank you very much for that. I'd like to give you an update on our renovations. Our foundation and the library concluded a successful campaign in 2016. We had three priorities: the teen center, the lab and makerspace, and collection support. I'm finishing up 8 years. I walked in the door and said, what are we doing for our teens? So 8 years later, we're about to open our teen center. It's really exciting. And the collection, of course, libraries are about reading, so the collection is essential. In addition to the outright donations for the campaign, a good part of the campaign gifts came in the form of bequests and planned giving. In addition, we were very fortunate to be nominated by Assemblywoman Barbara Lifton for a state and municipal facilities grant for construction. This provided electrical and data upgrades for the teen center and digital makerspace. The foundation applied for and was awarded a New York State Public Library construction grant thanks to the help of Finger Lakes Library System. This was for the renovation of the main restroom. The cost of that total, the total cost was $118,000. The grant provided $49,000. That the campaign funding will make up the difference for the cost of updating those facilities, which were unveiled in February and have been tremendously well received. So I don't know if you've had a chance to read today's Ithaca Times. This is the today is the issue. Actually, I have a copy with me. This is the issue where they present the best of Ithaca, and I thought that you would all enjoy this. The best public bathroom in the county. Tompkins County Public Library. And I do want to read this because it is more than just about the restrooms. The Tompkins County Public Library was voted best, and most readers will not be wondering why. The library is a place where you are likely to spend a relatively lengthy period of time. You're doing research. You're looking for a quiet place to relax and read. You're working on the public computers. You're attending a meeting or a conference being held in the Borg Warner Room. All in all, you're more likely to eventually need a bathroom than you are on many other downtown forays. So thank you, Tompkins County Public Library. Not only are you a beacon of culture in the community, but you are also there when nature calls.
That's very cute.
I don't know. We were talking about that today. I said, I don't know. Is my legacy going to be the new bathroom? Anyway, this is a wonderful...
Plaque.
I'm sorry?
I can name the bathroom.
The bathroom. So, yes, right. this is also a wonderful opportunity to thank county facilities, Aurel Lamero, Alan Lockett, Dana Dexter, and everyone who has helped lead, guide, and ensure the best renovation project we could possibly have. It's very exciting to see the renovations are close to finish. I hope that you will all be able to join us October 13th from 5 to 7 for the unveiling of the new services. I do have two videos to share about the carpet replacement. Not a week goes by that someone in the comes into the library and says, oh, I'm so glad you replaced the carpet. It's beautiful. I say, you need to thank Tompkins County Legislature for this. So let me see if I can get these to play. I had to put them on YouTube. Let's see. Do you think it'll be? They're removing the carpet. I really wanted to ride that. They almost let me.
All right. I'm just imagining moving all the books.
Well, just wait. Oh, right. It's a really great video coming up. This one's really fun. Special stack movers that allowed us to move the stacks fully loaded and saved a lot of money so you didn't have to take all those books off the shelves and then reshelve them.
I was wondering.
Yeah, those are a cool thing. And just to share with you some of the, this is all the equipment and the renovations I'm showing you were funded by either the grant or the campaign. This is in our new teen center. There will be a big monitor on the wall where they can plug in with computers and do shared homework. 3D printer, and what you can't tell is that little thing there is a TCPL logo. That was the first thing that they printed on the 3D printer. This photo here is the new teen services center, and for once we have enough shelving for all of the books. Up until this, in the young adult collection, for every book we purchased, we had to take a book out. So this allowed us to expand that collection and allow for growth, as well as take that collection out of the overall youth services and expand. So this is in the makerspace, special equipment for, it's called a maker table. Some really cool furniture. I'd love to give you a behind-the-scenes tour, and if I'm not there to do it, Annette can do it. this is our recommended budget. Thank you very much for the cost of living increase. We are anticipating about the same amount of fund balance carryover in 2017 as in 2016. We are receiving the sales tax via the City of Ithaca, and the Town of Ithaca in 2017 provided $10,000 to the library. This was a nice surprise. They had indicated they were going to stop contributing, but they did contribute $10,000 this year, and they have notified us that they will contribute $10,000 next year. We use that funding specifically for Sunday afternoons. The foundation, of course, raised the funds for the furniture and the equipment and the collections for the new service point and spaces, and we do have a separate capital project budget, but every year the foundation raises a significant amount for programs and collections. The Friends of the Library, of course, continue to support the library's collections and reading initiatives. Last year, they gave us funds so that we could inventory the collection, which is something any good business does. Without the Foundation and the Friends, there would be no updated and refreshed collections, so we're very grateful. They work very hard to raise a lot of money. The Foundation, outside of the capital campaign, raised over $111,793 in 2017. That went for programs and collections. And the Friends in 2017 gave $295,000 that went for collections and staff development. In terms of staffing, again, thank you so much for our Digital Futures Librarian. This is for our much-needed digital literacy services. I will say that our recommended personnel roster is below the recommended level. In 2009, the FTE was 49.4. We lost about 15% during the recession. And we're at 42.61 with the addition of Ben at this point. So I'd like to build on some of the things outlined by Diane and the county libraries about the major changes, major influences, things that are happening in libraries. This is not the usual major influences slide you might expect in this presentation, but they are the ones that drive the business of Tompkins County Public Library. Libraries absolutely must adapt to these changes because the community we serve has already embraced them. Because I'm retiring in a few weeks, I've spent a lot of time this year reflecting on how things have changed over the past 8 years. In 2009, e-readers were all the rage. Apple's first iPad was issued to much fanfare. Among the other rapid changes has been the increase in online searching, social media, smartphone use. In 2009, everyone believed that e-books would replace print books completely. That has not been the case. E-books are still wildly popular, and we need them. We've added even more, Hoopla and Zinio, as you heard. But for the third year in a row, in 2016, print books outsold e-books. So it's what we like to, in the library, we were always, library world, we were always pretty calm about this because TV, movie, radio all still happily coexist. So libraries are focused on reading and literacy, so the format doesn't matter, and we make sure that we have them all. But all of these rapid technology changes, as you can see, the difference in per second, per minute searching, they affect the way, they affect not just the library, but they affect schools and they affect our daily lives. They affect the way people walk through the door of our library. It's standard now for students to get Chromebooks and tablets and other devices. And at the library, at TCPL, we've seen changes too. Not only do we have an award-winning staff, we have seen continued growth in the use of the library, explosion in the number of programs offered to the community, greater collection use, and a dramatic increase in collaborations. All of our libraries collaborate all the time. And shared services, I would say that the library system, the county libraries, TCPL, all 33 libraries were probably a trendsetter for shared services because libraries have been sharing since they began to exist. That's what interlibrary loan is. The greatest change is that our library serves more people than ever, both in the library and online, especially though through collaboration and outreach in the community. Our library is a true community anchor and community center. What drives the community drives the library. I can't emphasize enough the impact of the rapid rate of change in our community, the digital world, and the expectations of our library. That drives our budget and the placement of appropriate staff. We leverage every dollar by running a lean, mean, and efficient operation while still responding to our community. As I reflect on 8 years ago when I started, 2009 was the height of the recession. Honestly, I walked in the door and I thought, this is the best job ever. And then I looked at the budget, you know, and then I remember talking to Joe and I said, these are great jobs. What happened? We had to take these great jobs in the recession. It certainly had an impact on the library and the county. The library relied heavily on its fund balance and the attrition of retiring staff to stay afloat. We are very, very grateful, deeply thankful to the county for the collaboration over the years so that in 2017 we were able to balance our budget and put our fund balance on the path to recovery. So on behalf of the library and the community who rely on us, we're grateful to the county for the shared success we have together. But I think it's also an opportunity to recognize the library has leveraged every possible resource to offer more than ever before. We're almost victims of our own success. The library is doing more and more and more. So thank you for the over-target request supported by the budget. In requesting the first one, the new staff computers, we've taken the recommendations of the county administrator into account. We conducted a review of our replacement plan for staff computers, and we'll have a new process where we're not asking for all new computers at once, but we'll develop a phased approach department by department so that it's not such a big lump sum. The new shelving will accommodate the increasing collection for babies and their parents. The existing shelving is not convenient since the books are not shelved efficiently. When it was installed 17 years ago, the collection was not as robust and not as high. So baby board books, just to give you some ideas, they're shelved like this, facing outward. So if you've got a baby on your hip and you're trying to thumb through these, that's really hard. So the new shelving will accommodate spine out, which we're not able to do now. So thank you very much. I think Sarah's very happy about that. Okay. These are the over-target requests not supported by the recommended budget. I would like to talk a little bit about this. According to the most recent Pew Internet and American Life Project, their reports come out periodically. They do lots of studies on library use. Most Americans, especially millennials, say that libraries help them find reliable and trustworthy information. I will say that these days all libraries are essential for assessing authoritative information. If you open any newspaper today, you see the importance of being able to find accurate information. Millennials, ages 18 to 35, stand out as the most ardent library fans, and people are surprised when I say that the younger generations are heavier users of public libraries than other generations. This generation and the younger ones are more likely to say the library helps them, and that one of the things that's important to them and essential for the future is sustainability and savings. Generations after them are also highly likely to use the library for cost savings. Sustainability has been at the forefront for a number of years now in our community. Libraries are among the most sustainable organizations and worth supporting. We buy something once, they're utilized thousands of times. And with the Friends, of course, we're doing a great recycling because all the libraries get their books, they take them to the Friends. There's this great recycling process. We have, since a major restructuring of staff in 2013 at TCPL, doing what every well-run organization does. We scrutinize and utilize every position and the funds to ensure we're efficiently staffed. Believe me, I look at every single staffing penny to make sure that I have it in the right place. Additionally, all of the staff worked with me to increase the library's required weekly openings to 60 in 2015. And I emphasize this especially because it was a very much a shared initiative where the entire library staff worked with me to figure out how do you stretch everybody's schedules over 60 hours without adding staff or adding a cost. So they worked with me and supported me in this. We appreciated that halftime librarian more than we could say. It's a restored position to one that was lost. The position that we're requesting this year would have specialized responsibility for providing services to elementary age children. We've analyzed our new service points. We also look at how we can deploy all of our staff, our librarians, across the library, and we believe that this will allow us to truly offer all that our community is asking for us. We understand it's important to shepherd resources carefully and that we're not the only institution needing staff. We have reviewed as a team and discussed current and future staffing needs. With the additional position to serve our elementary age services, we believe we will not need to ask for additional staff for a long time. This is a restored position, but we believe that we have figured out the correct staffing with this additional 30 hours. We're open 60 hours per week the majority of the year and 64 when Sundays are included. In a busy library, and especially a very busy youth services department, you have to have someone at the service desk at all time. You've got a lot of kids running around. The librarians and the staff in youth services also oversee purchasing the entire collection, performing routine business work, attending meetings, attending trainings such as security training, staff meetings. They offer in-house programming and community outreach, and they collaborate with other organizations and schools. One of the librarians has personally seen every single one of the 2,500 Ithaca City School District elementary schools students at her visits to the schools for summer. We work with every school in the county. In 2016, there were over 22,000 attendees at youth services programs. Libraries are a core component to a community's educational infrastructure. We're a crucial source of early childhood education and after-school educational opportunities. There will always be a need for an educated population in our community. Always. This position will generate an important return on investment to our community and the children that we serve as well as the schools that we support. As for the maintenance of effort, the amount requested will enable us to completely cover the typical vendor increases, salary increases, health insurance increases, and keep the library's budget balanced. We're very grateful for the cost of living increase recommended. We are hoping to see savings in the health insurance. This past year, we followed the county's example by negotiating the Platinum Plan being offered to employees, and this will definitely help us in the future in this area. So thank you. I'll just say one thing about the fine free. I've been a librarian a million years. I've been a librarian for about 40 years. And one of my very first initiatives was, I was in my 20s. I was trying to get Cornell University to eliminate all the fines. And I thought they were going to just run me out of town. So can I just say how happy I am to see that this is starting to be a reality? And Tompkins County Public Library, you know, as we partner with our county libraries, we do not charge for baby board books, so the shelving and the fine free is really good. We just eliminated fines for the picture books for children. The library does see a lot. There's a bigger amount of fines taking in because we're the largest library. But as Sarah said, you can never count library fines as an income source, because if everyone returns their book on time, you'd never make any money. So it is a really worthwhile thing. I'm really happy to see that this is taking hold finally. But thank you very much. I've loved being the director of the library. I've loved working with you. You have supported us. It is a library to be proud of, and in great part, thanks to your work. Thank you.
Questions for Susan. Thank you very much, Susan. Are there questions for Susan? Martha?
I had to say, I looked at the two slides ago where it said replace aging staff, and then I said computers.
Oh, yes. So yes, we want to. They're replacing me. I'm the aging staff.
We're not usually that blunt, so I think. Or replace aging staff with computers. That's another option. So how many computers would be part of that? 36,000?
It'll be the staff, about 50 computers. Well, between 40. There's some shared computers, so it's probably more like 40.
Sure. Those will be replaced?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But in meeting with Joe, we had talked about if it was possible to have more of a phased approach to this rather than a giant lump sum. So we talked about going department by department. We're on a 5-year replacement, and we do leverage those old computers to repair and keep them in good shape.
Okay. And so the 23,000, the first OTR, that was did this last year. We gave
actually,
him an
actually,
increase?
I think it's fair to say that we closed the structural deficit last year. Mm-hmm. This amount really is the difference between the 2% that we gave them and the real growth of the maintenance of effort budget. Mm-hmm. So the 2% was close, but not quite there. Mm-hmm. So had it been 2.25 or something like that, it would have hit the mark. So I'd argue we're still out of a structural deficit, okay. But this is an appropriate add-on to the 2% we gave them just to sustain current levels of service.
Okay. And we've given them 2% this year?
So basically we gave everybody's 2%, and they're asking for a little bit more.
Okay. Right. And so you did include the one-times, but the two target amounts, is that in your category? I didn't look at.
Right, so one is suggested, that's the maintenance of effort, and the other, euphemistically, I've shaded in pink. So that's not among the suggestions.
Okay, I see. All right. Well, thank you very much, Susan, for everything. And you know, it's really been a terrific joy to work with you.
Thank you.
We really appreciate all that you've done. And I think the bathrooms are one thing that we ought to celebrate.
I'm excited, though. I've known Annette a long time, and we have this amazing staff. They're so incredibly dedicated, and when I did this presentation for the department heads, they really raked me over the coals. I had to really convince them to give me the money. You know, I kept saying, would you give me the money? Would you help us out? They made me really, really work hard, which is what you want your staff to do, is to keep you honest.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
See you in a couple of weeks.
I will.
Thank you. And thank you, Susan. It's truly amazing what you've accomplished, and I wish you great happiness with whatever you take on next. I do want to put Joe on the spot because, as you know, he did not, he colored pink your youth services thing. Not only did he not include it, but it's not recommended. And Joe, speak, lay out your reasoning, please.
It's painful because Susan and I have had this great working relationship for all these years. She's just an incredible combination of competence and passion for her job. So so it does pain me a little bit. But as I looked at the request and looked at the past several years of what the county has done, over the past several years, we've committed a great deal of our taxing capacity, our additional taxing capacity, to dig out of the hole, to solve the structural deficit, to help them. There's been a bit of a pickup on personnel. It's not been huge, but have a couple of more positions on the roster. Is it one or two over the last 8 years? One from
that's
last
the
year.
Halftime, is it? But so, we did take a pretty deep cut.
You did indeed. So we've again, with the capacity that we've had, we've committed a great deal of our capacity to working with the library to address those problems. This year, with priorities looming, the jail, housing, and so forth, that's really what led to this suggestion, that given the amount of money we have to spend and still stay within 2.4% and the competing priorities for that money, that the money was better placed in those other competing priorities. That was my thinking.
Okay, and I'm sure you didn't come to that lightly, but I'm really hearing Susan. I think for years we have, she's been talking about the increased number of people and doing ever more with less. So I will give this serious thought.
Thank you.
Hannah.
I just hate that I don't get to work with you for longer. Everybody is retiring. I've only had 2 years. And it's been wonderful for the 2 years. The library was my hangout when I was a kid, you know, every single day after school for
so
like
glad.
10 years. So it's a place that I love very dearly. And so thank you for taking such good care of it.
Thank you.
I just had a few questions about the position. How many of the youth services librarians do you have right now? What has been the increase in the number of...
We have... two full-time librarians, we have four part-time librarians, and we have one full-time library assistant. In 2009, 2010, we lost a full-time youth services librarian when she retired, and I know in 2010, we didn't ask for more than what was required for the state maintenance of effort. So it was a pretty deep cut that year. So we've been short that one librarian for all these years.
So of all your services, how much do you think is dedicated to youth services?
Of all our services in the library?
Or of the patrons, how much do you
think? Oh, my gosh, probably
percentage-wise.
More than 50%.
And is that the librarians that are dedicated to youth services, is that 50% of the librarians that
no.
you have? What percent?
That's the smallest department in terms of public services. It's hard to say 50% of the services because we have close to a million things that circulate in all ways, digital, physical, and that went up almost 5% last year. So you've got a staff to deal with that. And then for the regular reference, which is for adults, older than 18, that area is exploding as well, particularly for seniors in our community because there's a demand for services. So I could probably look at if I don't have that information, but if you wanted a percentage breakdown by staff, we could certainly do that. But it's my opinion that from the moment I started, there was not enough staff in youth services. I was astounded at the volume of work that they did in terms of buying a collection always seems easy because it's so much fun to go shopping. And when you have all the money in the world, you can buy everything. But when you don't have all the money in the world, you have to select very carefully. So they spend a good amount of time and they have professional expertise. I've done everything in a library except children's services. And I think there's a misunderstanding of the required level of expertise for a youth services librarian.
One last question. Do you you asked for a full-time. Would a half-time be not helpful?
Or, a half-time or, would be very helpful.
Or taking one of your part-time and making it full-time?
That's hard on the staff who are part-time, who may not be able to work full-time. But if there's a way to have a half-time librarian, that would be wonderful.
Okay.
We'd be wonderful. Thank you.
Anyone else? Julie? Mike?
Susan, I'm going to miss you very much. You've been just so great. But I want to talk about staffing. I think in the past you had given us a year-by-year listing of staff, numbers of librarians. And I think I heard you say when you were speaking this evening that with this one additional librarian, you would foresee no need for additional ones for a number of years.
Yes.
That is a pretty amazing statement to me because mm-hmm. I can't foresee the future as in that manner.
I did say not never. I'm just saying for, you know, foreseeable future. But I do believe that because, you know, the thing that happened in 2013, I didn't mean to cut you off, but, you know, we needed to find the money internally. You know, that was still a hard year for coming back the economy. And we took a good hard look and we restructured and repurposed positions. And that was a difficult thing. It was pretty hard to do. But since then, every time we have a vacancy, the department heads, who are our senior level management, and I look at the money, and we don't just replace the position. We say, where is the greatest need? And then we try to utilize that funding for the position where it's appropriate. We can't repurpose we can't manufacture someone with the youth services MLS. Which is why we're asking. But I believe with that position that we would be able to. We also have done a lot more cross training, so staff deployment at all the desks. It was very separated. You know, one person worked at this reference desk, didn't work at this reference desk. So there's a lot of cross training. And even Ben, the new librarian who's responsible for technology, he works at both the youth services and the main reference desk. So. You know, it takes some work, but I believe that we would be okay for a while. I mean, I've been asking for staff because they were lost. These are not new positions. They were lost. And in 8 years, we've replaced one half-time.
Yes. I guess it's the number that you have lost has not been replaced. And I appreciate the cross-training and that people can fill in where they're needed. Sometimes the reference desks are all available and sometimes people aren't there. But I would like to see the number that you used to have, and I would like to see the number that you think would make life easier for you this coming year beyond. I get the sense that it's beyond just a half-time additional person that you need. And I understand that you're being very cooperative, recognizing we have other needs. As Joe articulated, we have some really big things hanging out there. But I don't know that doesn't mean that we shouldn't consider the library's historic needs, which still continue to this day. So I would appreciate a simple chart showing what you used to have over the years.
Okay.
From before you moved to before you were here, when the move was made to the new space, the old Woolworth building.
I'd be very happy to do that. Thank you for asking.
Okay, thank you.
I'm Mike Hall. Or, I'm sorry, Mike Sigler. Or Mike Hall if you want to.
Show me the pension. I'm just wondering about this because I got my city tax bill in the mail this afternoon. I'm wondering, has the city decided to take any of my city tax money and put it towards the library or the town?
No, but I think it'd be great if the county were willing to talk with them to do that.
All right. Yeah.
The Borgwarner room is heavily used by the city. And people often, because it's located downtown, think it's a city library. We appreciate the sales tax agreement, but I think it'd be wonderful if the city and the county could work together so that there's a little more support.
Do you ever make a budget presentation to council like this?
To Common Council, we have invited them over. Yes, we have, and I meet with the mayor. The downtown representative, Seth Murtaugh, has come to committee meetings. I think we could do a better job of reaching out to them and educating them about the library. We have tried, but this is something that we have a community relations and outreach committee, and one of the agenda topics was this very thing of putting a plan in place to really connect with them, make sure they understand the value that the library brings to the city and the county. So it's a good question.
I mean, we...
Yeah. I would like to see the county ask for support for its library, but I believe we need to do the education.
Yeah, man, I don't... They have some kind of budget process. I don't know. Never been through it, but if, you know, no.
Yeah, they do have a budget process, but, you know...
I know. It's different with the mayor. I understand.
Yeah. Anyone else?
Thanks.
Susan, let me just say from my point of view up here, all the years you've been here, you've always told a great story. You're factual, concise, and shown a great deal of passion for your job. And I think when the TCPL board chose you, it was a great day for the library. Thank you for your service, and enjoy the time on your own way. So, again, thank you. We appreciate your
thank you, and thank you for all the work that you do.
And now, my call. By the way, my name is Steve, and I'm not certain where I live.
Okay. For those of you that I haven't met, I'm Mike Hall. I'm the director of the airport, and I have with me our deputy director for administration, finance, security, personnel. You can keep going, Roxanne Noble. So she's here because she can answer any of the tough questions that you might have after my presentation. I have a few slides to run through to sort of get us in the neighborhood of the airport, and then obviously time for you to question any items on our budget after the presentation is finished. I want to start by reminding us a little bit about our economy. That slide was supposed to come up completely full, but I'll catch up with a presentation here. We've got a big gross national product here, the strongest economy in upstate New York. A growing population, a housing shortage, 15,000 people drive in and out of the county every day to go to work. And at the core of all this is a world-class research institution, a diversified manufacturing base, and a magnet for international students. And that's something I want to talk about with regard to the airport. We are the gateway to this economy. Some people think that we're centrally isolated, but we're actually globally connected. And it's very integral to everything that happens in this economy. So we need to make sure that the airport remains an integral part of our community. And to that end, we've proposed to the state as part of the governor's state airport development competition, the following project. And I'm going to run through it quickly. The governor has awarded four $40 million prizes upstate. One remains, and the essence of our proposal is contained on the next couple of slides. The part that matters most to us, the part that the state asked us to parse out as a separate piece, is a little over $14 million to fix up the airport within the fence, if you will. It includes becoming an international airport, upgrading security. Unfortunately, the iconic view of the airport is the bag screening machines on the wrong side of the counter. We have an airport that's 20 years old and that was designed before 9/11. Security measures came into place, and while we meet federal security standards, we do it in a rather awkward and not customer-friendly way, and that's something we've got to address. We also will be all jet service starting in October, and you don't walk across a ramp to get onto a jet. In fact, the American Airlines Embraer doesn't even have stairs built into it. They were so confident that there would be jetways. So we recently received a federal grant to add an additional passenger boarding bridge, and, of course, received from the legislature some months earlier approval to move in that direction. Now we have federal money to take care of that, but we would still like the timeliness and the impact of a state investment in the airport. And we would upgrade passenger amenities and do some really neat things, like covering parking with solar panels, which would be very appropriate in a county that is so focused on environmental compliance and sustainability. Then there's the other project. This is the waterfront. And we tried to pull this together. And before I talk about this, I want to say that the airport's position, whether it's with regard to New York State Department of Transportation, maybe a new home for a sheriff, a DMV testing facility, is we're here to provide solutions subject to your edits. We're not advocating for any of this other than the fact that we've got our hand up saying if this is the best way to go in your judgment, we can make this happen on the airport. So the idea was to clean out the waterfront. And that project has received a lot of interest and discussion, and the reason is very straightforward. When you get to the economic impact of this, it's huge, and something that would attract private sector investment, raise the tax base, lots of construction jobs, which are temporary, and then permanent jobs that are really significant. So the governor has these two pieces before him. And as I said, we were asked to split the project. And from our point of view, as an airport, the most important thing is to take care of that part inside the fence. And this part, I think, will carry itself one way or another. Okay, out of that context, switching around to our budget, it's essentially flat for the third year in a row. Some of the things that influenced it this year, we did a lot of work, Roxanne did a lot of work on a reorganization that changed the character of our personnel distribution, but put us in line to be a very efficient operating entity. And the net result is that personnel's up a little bit, but some other areas in the budget are down, so we essentially held a flat line. We now have two deputies. I introduced Roxanne before. She has many hats. The other one is Chief Josh Nally, who's our fire chief and also our airfield operations supervisor. I can't tell you how important those two people have been to getting the airport account straightened out and moving forward. Josh has saved literally hundreds of thousands of dollars in operating expense on the airport, which is why the budget can be essentially flat. We are now a leading account when it comes to the efficiency of computer management of an airfield. And I'll talk a little bit about that in a moment. As far as equipment's concerned in the budget, we've got this plan going where we purchase vehicles like the pickup truck in white. which is a very marketable color. We operate them throughout the period of warranty, so we don't have to pay for maintenance. We auction them off and buy the next one. And that's essentially reduced our vehicle budget to nothing for that kind of vehicle. We're also fixing up some terminal and airfield signage this year. And as a reminder, we are a fire department also, and the turnout gear lasts 10 years, and we have a phased replacement of the firefighting equipment. Haven't changed in terms of the number of people, have changed a little bit in terms of job responsibilities. Here's some of the things that are going on. We're redoing the parking lot. We have a new ticketing system. There'll be a double exit lane. You can pay for your parking in the terminal before you step out in the brisk wind of fall and winter. And we have additional rental car parking. I want to pause on that for just a second. That was a $750,000 line in the budget a few years ago. We did it all in-house for no charge. We used the millings from the runway project last year. We've got a beautiful little parking lot for the rental car people. We said, look, we did our part up front. You guys put a fence around it, and you can park there, and they will do that shortly. Not as quickly as I wanted, but it's on them to put the fence around it to preserve security. The bottom three items, we've got a big parking lot to clear. And this ramp dozer is just a big industrial tractor with a 24-foot blade on it, because when you have to clear as much ramp as we do and not clearing it impedes operations, you need a big piece of equipment. So that's in the federal budget with a little bit of local share. The multitask snow removal vehicle, if you haven't seen our plow-broom combination, you need to come up. It's pretty impressive. It's about the size of a tractor trailer. The front end plows and the back end brooms. And you say, well, okay, that replaces two operators and two vehicles, but it does a lot more than that. The plow is set an inch above the ground, so you don't scrape the runway with the steel blade. And the broom takes it right down to the surface, which is necessary for the operating specs of our jet service. And so we have a lot less maintenance load on the runway, if you will, the painting and the scraping away of the asphalt. Just one of the many things that Josh has done. And the last one's really cool. And Josh is a farmer when he's not at the airport. He does a lot of things. And when they cut hay at 15 miles an hour with a 42-foot hay bind, and they overlap 6 inches. And you can't do that as an operator. So we started thinking about it one day over coffee, and we thought, you know, the runway is 150 feet wide and 7,000 feet long. It's perfect for GPS control. So we're working with John Deere, and we're going to put GPS control on the plows. And what that means is that, first of all, nobody, especially in a snowstorm, can hold that straight line, but the GPS can. And secondly, we're going to get the most efficiency out of each pass. And I bring this up just because it's one more example where, you know, some very creative people that are part of our community and that work at the airport have thought up some great ways to be more efficient. And if you add all this stuff up, we are the most efficient and reliable airfield in all of upstate New York. That doesn't mean we aren't below weather minimum some days, but it means that the surface conditions, we've been closed for 4 hours and 2 years, and nobody else can touch that. And it's because of those 10 ops technicians and some really smart moves with regard to equipment. Okay, capital projects quickly. Here's some funded things that are going on. We have a solar array going in that's going to, you know, it's going to feed the city of Ithaca. How that works, you pump electricity in here, they take it out there, and they get credit for it. The East Hill Flying Academy is going to be relocating, and we're going to be redoing the ramp in the vicinity of East Hill. That'll be a springtime project. And here's some things that we're out there looking for. We talked briefly about the terminal renovation. You know, the plan A is to get the governor to make an investment. It's the best investment he could make, believe me. Plan B is we got to do it ourselves. We'll be talking with you about that in committee, because we cannot stay where we are. And so we're beginning to assemble the parts and pieces, and, you know, and that involves things like getting a jet bridge from the feds and something else from the state and in the end maybe doing some bonding. Very complex to put Plan B together, but we're working on it because there's no guarantee we're going to get that state money. Part of the state package is a federal customs facility. We're also looking at a new fire station, which would be a federal investment, and it would allow us to put customs in the current Ops Administration Building, which is a great location. You've got the ramp right there by Teganic, and it would be the ideal spot on the airfield. And you've heard before about the fuel farm moving down by the sheriff, where we could pump fuel both sides of the fence to airplanes on the airport side and to fleet vehicles like county vehicles and the sheriff and what have you on the other side of the fence. Save some money for everybody. And lastly, the flavor of the month is the DMV testing pad. Now, we have a spot at the intersection of Cherry and Warren Road, which is half of a parking lot already. Often Lansing parks construction stuff there over the summer with our permission. We can make that into a DMV testing pad. We can use millings from the airport to build up the base, et cetera, et cetera. DMV is willing to put some money in. Once again, this turns out to be a very interesting project because everybody from the school district to anyone that runs a truck, anybody that needs a CDL needs a place to practice and then a place to test. And this is basically just a football field-sized piece of asphalt, and you go out and put out cones to lay out a course, and then somebody takes the truck and drives through the cones. Used to do it downtown. People parked on the street downtown didn't like that so well. Much better to have you drive your truck over a cone out by the airport than it is to drive over my Volkswagen on Court Street. So anyway, that discussion is ongoing. We're getting a firm project plan that will circulate through committee and everything, see if we can't pull this together. But you wouldn't think of it, but getting a commercial driver's license is actually a really big deal for the economy and for our community. Right now, you got to go to Rochester or Syracuse to test. Okay. A hot news announcement. Some of you are aware that Delta Airlines pulled the overnight flight out of Ithaca because they ran the fleet too hard and they got behind on maintenance requirements and they needed to keep the airplanes in Detroit to catch up. The impact of that was significant. We spoke with top management at SkyWest and at Delta, and the flight will be coming back in November, not March. And that's really good news for us because it's how everybody left to get to the West Coast in time for a day's work. So it was a good recovery. Last thing quickly, I didn't put a slide in here, but community connection. Just had an airport open house and a great family event, 5K run. People ran with their dogs. They pushed kids in strollers. It was trying to make the airport a friendly place. It's not a friendly place normally. You know, you get embarrassed going through security. You crawl down a tube into a smaller tube, look out a little hole. You got no idea what's going on. Now you can run down the runway, and little kids are waving their arms like they're going to take off. And it was very good. We made a couple $1,000s for the SPCA. We're going to have a holiday party for the less fortunate children in the community along December time just to get them out to the airport. And my next move this evening is to go kick off the Finger Lakes chapter of Women in Aviation International to try to attract more women into aviation. So any of you, you don't have to be a woman to join, but this is an industry where it's single-digit percentage across the board employment by women, and we're very short in terms of pilots, maintainers, dispatchers, you name it. If you want a job for the next 20 years in an industry that's going to be around, this is a great place to get a job. And this chapter has scholarships, mentoring opportunities, lots of things to help us draw women into the, into the aviation world. Your questions.
Question, Anna. And Mike.
I never expected in my life that I would have such pride in my own airport. You seem to do that, and I always loved your presentations. So the DMV parking lot, what is the potential time frame, funding? When do you think
I think we can construct it as soon as the weather breaks in the spring. We're late right now, especially getting some money out of the state. Basically, we can do this in-house, except for the paving. That's going to cost money. and that's what DMV would pay for. It's probably $150,000. The rest of it we can do with the highway department and the airport. If we collectively decide we want to do this, and there have been other sites, but DMV actually approached us about this, so I think that's the direction they're leaning. We're not trying to drive it, but we're more than willing to step up and say, let's put it at the airport if that's what you want to do.
Yeah, it seems to be a huge potential money saver. So, and the other another question, you point out that how important this is for Cornell to continue to be the international entity that it is. I know you've had conversations with them. Are they able, willing to step up and help us make this an international airport it needs to be to support them?
They are. I think many of you are more familiar with Cornell and at this level than I am. But I would say that academic institutions are not enormously agile to start out with. They're fairly flat organizations. They've had horrible leadership situation over the past few years and a president leaving, interim president dying, and so Martha's doing a great job, but really they've been pretty struggling for the past few years just trying to get the whole piece together. I met yesterday with Joel Molina and Gerald Hector's on our board, and we talked about how, they can assist us. There's an opportunity for us to add a hub, and the hub we want is Chicago. We understand we got three destinations right now. Newark is trouble, and it's never going to be anything but trouble. Philadelphia's gotten better under American, and Detroit's pretty good. So you're looking at Newark, 60% reliability, Philadelphia, 70% reliability, Detroit, 80% reliability, Chicago, 80% reliability. Chicago was just named the best global hub in the world, and Americans interested in taking us there. So we are working with Cornell to get the right kind of level of meeting to see if we could add that service. And there's a small community air service development grant opportunity coming up. So we're working on it, and Cornell is a huge partner. They've also been helping us get to the governor, and these slides that I showed you, the colorful ones, were briefed to Mr. Ali Chaudhry, who's the governor's second floor economic development transportation guy, recently. So Cornell's opened the door. So yes, we're getting great support from them, and it's in their interest. I mean, they're having double digit growth in Pacific Rim students, and Ithaca, a lot of the world is an unfriendly place, but not Ithaca. You're welcome here. We speak your language. We cook your food. You're welcome here. And we want to welcome you through this global portal. Ithaca actually is 50-50 in terms of people coming here versus people leaving. More typically, upstate airports like Elmira are 70-30. 70% of the people leave Elmira. They go someplace, spend their money. They come home when they're broke. That's not economic development. 50% of the people that come to Ithaca spend money here. The average visitor from China spends $15,000. That's really important to that, back to that slide about the $8 billion economy that we have. And we're trying to get that message to the governor saying, look, this is a terrific investment. If you feed the goose that lays the golden egg, we will continue to employ 15,000 people who commute in here and spend their money back home in economies like Chemung, which has been struggling and is just down 3% in the latest assessment.
Mike and Martha and Will.
Mike, what's the status of the tower now? Is it under threat like it was before? Is it being used? Is it shut down a lot? Does it need to be replaced? What's the
tower?
Our tower.
Oh, no, the tower is fine. Federal support, we had a struggle a few years ago because we are a contract tower as opposed to a government employee staff tower. We're in good shape nationally. The program is well supported. The only thing we'd like to do is pick it up and put it on top of the administration building because it would open up the commercial ramp a little bit more. You wouldn't have to actually had to wing walk or, walk by the wing to make sure that the de Havillands didn't hit the structure of the tower on the way by. So we see no issues with the tower. And they're open, you know, they're open as they always have been from 6:30 in the morning till 10 o'clock at night.
That's good, because I think when it was threatened here a few years ago that hurt our emplanements.
It did, and emplanements bottomed out 3 years ago, and they've been rising steadily since then. And I think maybe next year we'll be back up to our, you know, near our higher level when we get the jet service squared away. We got hit hard by the regional airline contraction, but we're working our way out of it.
Thank you.
Martha.
On the DMV testing pad, is there a commitment that they would pay for the materials?
The file I sent you this afternoon has been sent to CNS Engineering to make a project booklet. The file is a list of specifications for what DMV needs to have in a pad. As soon as that project booklet's available, which I would say would be within a week or so, we will circulate it both internally within the county. We'll go back to DMV. They've been cagey about how much they were willing to put into it. But I have had conversations with them in which I said, you know, we could do a lot of this self-help, but it's going to cost $150,000 to pave it, and they didn't blink on the phone. So I think the answer to your question is it depends and it needs to be negotiated, but they came to us wanting to do this. So for whatever internal reasons they have, they wanted to create Tompkins County as a central CDL testing site. That's a good start in a negotiation for who's going to pay for what.
So that's really good news. We had TCAT here Tuesday, and we started a conversation about NYSEG and their lot, and if to be able to say that it would be a temporary solution to use NYSEG's lot from, you know, soon until this is done would actually make it a much easier ask. If you got the go-ahead and the money and all, how long would it take? When do you think that would be?
To construct it?
Yeah.
A couple weeks. It's not, I mean, it's half of it's already pretty much built. You got to clear some dirt and haul some tailings over there. It's not a, you know, it's not a six-month project, let's put it that way. Maybe a month is more reasonable, but it's pretty quick.
Terrific. And then the solar on the parking lot, you know, if we get that grant, right?
If we get the grant, our $14.2 million inside the fence airport renovation includes more parking with solar roofs.
I've heard that's really unproductive in this climate. I'm worrisome that you have to plow around them and all that. Is that you feel like it would be? It's a good.
Well, I think two things. You know, we solar arrays take space,
right,
and this is a good way to get two layers of space. My understanding is that the panels keep a lot of snow. You know, it's on the panel, it melts, it drips off, you know, all those sorts of things. That this is a worthwhile way to go. That's the best answer I can give you. We're also looking at putting solar panels on the roofs of the buildings. Teganic is interested in putting half of their hangar under panels. I mean, we're Solar Tompkins, and we want to support that initiative.
Okay, great. Terrific. Thank you.
Will.
Mike, very exciting. I would love it if you could get the connection to Chicago, so I hope that comes through.
His child, daughter.
Did you have relatives there?
Yeah, please do it at Midway as opposed to O'Hare. But I'm a little unclear about the utility of an international embark portion. How would that work? Because people who typically don't fly out of Ithaca to Europe, they go to New York City or whatever.
Oh, they do. When Cornell's commencement last spring, we had 42 Gulfstream class airplanes on the ramp, and a bunch of them were international. And
these are private planes,
yeah,
as opposed to
This is general aviation. This is not geared for commercial air service. Lots of times, like for example, if we got a flight, we've had some interest in Toronto, and if we had a flight with a Canadian carrier from Toronto, they would clear U.S. Customs in Toronto. That's kind of the way it's set up. No, this is for general aviation.
Okay, thank you. That makes sense.
There are a lot of private planes that would like to fly into the Finger Lakes. Now we're getting into the come visit our region sort of thing. A lot of Canadian traffic, a lot of traffic to Europe, and a lot of traffic to Asia. We think that in the first year, if we had a customs facility, we would exceed Syracuse in terms of custom clearances. And Taganic is very bullish on this idea. And they do a lot of flying to Europe, and they just as soon not have to stop at someplace on the return. Right now you go into White Plains or Bangor or something like that, and they get the money and the fuel.
Okay, so. Thank you.
Anyone else? Mike, Roxanne, Josh. You do a great job for us. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
CCE.
So it was nice to actually see two really good presentations right before this. The library, probably one of the best in the state, if not the best one in the state. The airport, we just heard, best in the state.
Not going to get any love, Kenny.
I was just going to say Cooperative Extension is the best one in the state. Certainly the largest. It's we're probably the second largest cooperative extension in the country. So you can, and that's because Tompkins County supports cooperative extension, has supported cooperative extension for many, many years, 100 years. And I think you have, I hope that we can make you proud. As I said, right now we have two people, one's in Alaska. Working with people actually across Alaska on biomass, on pellet stoves, pellet furnaces, based on the work that's been going on here. And another one has been working on with local meats here, is actually working in a couple of different states, Oregon and I think Colorado, based on the work that he's done here. So we don't just stick around here in Tompkins. Of course, that's not, you're not paying for that. that's paid for by somebody else. So I really thank you for the opportunity to present to you tonight. I'd like to remind people that we are a subordinate government agency of the county. It's the county's choice to have a cooperative extension. New York State's county law establishes it, and it's useful to think of us as one part, one significant part, I hope, of your toolbox. This is 2016 impacts because we're still working on 2017. I shared with you the annual report from 2016 on your table there. It's also, I sent out a link to the electronic version if you have an e-reader instead of, prefer e-reading to paper. And then the table of impacts that I normally share with you each year that will be coming. We're double checking some numbers, but on that table, again, we outline a lot of what the value is to the county, with the focus on what kind of tax revenue we generate for the county and savings on the county's budget bottom line by offering services that save money elsewhere in your budget. We also talk about it in terms of its impact on the county's economy, in terms of what sectors we work in and how many jobs are in those sectors and so on. And we also talk in terms of what it does, how people in the county, it's not just us saying there's value, but people in the county say there's value with 66,000 participants. That, by the way, is, that's two-thirds of the population of the county. It's not unique participants. In other words, some of those people are duplicate in the sense that some people participate in more than one program. But if you thought of it in terms of sort of the repeat participation, because many of those sessions are actually multiple sessions with 10, sometimes more than that, sessions per sort of class, we're actually getting up close to 500,000 participants, if you think of it that way. So people, there's a lot of participation. 1,700 volunteers who put in 50,000 hours of time. We do a lot with student interns from campus, do a lot also to employ young people. 1,200 partners work with us, and in addition to the time they put in, and those partners include businesses, but in addition to the time they put in, they also offer $400,000 in support. And this all results in a net cost to the county of about $280,000. Our budget for 2016 was this. And so if we have about 150 different revenue streams. So it's a relatively complex budget. Those revenue streams can be brought into, put into these six or seven categories here. The county appropriation. Why is it not showing up?
Those colors look the same, which is...
Yeah. Well, that $740,000 is the county's appropriation. That's actually a mistake. That's 2017's appropriation. It was $702,000 in 2016. But the rest of those numbers are 2016 numbers. New York State, essentially, for every dollar you give us, it's a formula, but it's a formula plus other things. But for every dollar, in this particular year, it works out to about 3-1. So you give us a dollar, they give us three. Not too many times that New York State does that for us. The feds give us a sliver, literally, of our budget. And grants and contracts, where we spend a lot of our time writing grants, in 2016, we surpassed the $3 million mark for the first time. $720,000 in fees for services, and then we get about $300,000 or so from private contributions. We take that money and we work really hard to make it efficient, to operate efficiently. So I've given you 2003, 2010, and 2016, sort of a split over time. We've cut our cost to the county per FTE of program staff to less than half. Now, if you actually factor in inflation, it gets really low, because that doesn't factor in inflation. Program staff, the admin staff ratios are now at about 8.5-1. So for every admin person, we have about 8.5 program people that they're serving. And we leverage the county dollar. We're up almost to 10-1. So for every dollar the county gives us, we get about 10. We return about 9 other dollars, if you will, $9.5 to the county. The cost to the county per FTE and the program staff to admin staff ratio, those are basically leveling out, as you can see. You can't see it on the cost to the county, but in 2015 it was about $8,100 as well. And it has bearing on one of the OTRs that we're asking for, so I'll talk about that in a minute later. Some of our major influences, I just alluded, we're sort of at a tipping point on the reduction in administrative support. In other words, we can't really squeeze much more out of administrative efforts to support program staff. We've, over the past 2 years, have had a reduction in the number of senior program staff from 5-4. This is the second year. The jury's still out on whether that's the appropriate way to go. We had to go that way because of budgets, but that's where we essentially have 4 senior program staff versus the 5 we used to have. And we continue to have this devolution of administrative functions from state level cooperative extension down to the local. We've talked in the past about regionalization. This is really the regionalization, but one of the things that's happened at the state level was they realized, as they started looking at cooperative extension Tompkins County, that in fact we are larger than almost every other. There's only one other region in the state of an aggregation of associations that's actually larger than we are as a single entity. The efforts to regionalize, to move things from the state level down to a regional level, in our case, they basically moved it down to a local level. So we everything do just for our own association. Our recommended budget is a little changed from last year. Both years have a fair amount of one-time money in them. our over-target requests supported by the recommended budget, there were three, and I was pleased, thank you, Joe, for including these. The OTR 13 and 14 are really viewed as and treated, and that's how we've done a number of things over the past several years as sort of investments on the part of the county to expand our programming or to develop resources for key issues in the county or to actually improve our operational efficiency. I would have loved to have shown you a couple of the things that we've been doing with website stuff, but it would have soaked up all the time that you would have here this evening, or all the time that I have with you this evening. I do want to say, though, that we are beta testing an online expense reimbursement app, and also a really cool app for HR, where people can sort of, if they aspire to a different position in the association, they can look at what the qualifications are, they can look at what the needs are for that position, and access training for each of those things. So if they need a particular skill or need a quality to take my job, for example, they can tap right into the resources they would need to actually do that. So next year, because that program will be in place, I'll probably be gone. So the second one, the managing and leveraging interns, so that first one up there, the 13, is actually a continuation from last year, but it's a reduction. So last year we asked for $19,500. This year we're asking for 2/3 of that. The intention there was to free up time of senior staff who could develop new relationships, expanded relationships with folks on campus at Cornell, and use those then to generate new revenue and generate new programs. That's working. We've got some really interesting stuff going on. It's the $6,500 reduction that we're looking at next year from the county is actually being paid for by this increased revenue that we're getting through Cornell and through other places. And that we expect to continue in the following year with another reduction in that one-time money. The OTR 14 is approaching it the same way. It's just that we're focusing on interns as opposed to sort of youth or everything. We worked with MSW interns. We've worked with them for years, usually only one or two a year. This year we've had six. We've had really strong interest from four different MSW programs around this region, and we could have 50 if we had the capacity to work with 50. We've also been in discussions, and we expect to start, if this funding comes through, with MEng students, Masters in Engineering students from Cornell and Binghamton. Both programs are interested in providing students for us. The third OTR is on that's approved by Joe, is this real-time energy monitoring for buildings in the county. What you see there is it's on my smartphone as well. It's basically measures in real-time electricity. It's in four buildings right now. There's only three there illustrated, but the fourth one is Tatum. And it's in each of those buildings, those are dates there, and you can expand that those dates so that you basically can get it down to minute-by-minute monitoring of energy use. And if we were to show you the minute-by-minute, you'd see spikes in all – well, you would have seen spikes in all of them. Now you only see spikes in Cooperative Extension's building. Because what we've discovered is that there were anomalies, there were problems in every one of these buildings. Now, Holtz Building is a LEED certified, platinum LEED certified building, brand new in terms of what's been going into it. And they themselves had almost 20% reduction in their energy costs once we figured out by monitoring their thing that they were losing, that there was energy problem, that there were problems with their equipment in terms of the way it was functioning. They knew, in fact, their models, their consumption was higher than what their models were projecting, but they couldn't figure out what the problem was. So we started monitoring in real time. They've been able to figure out what the problem is. So this, the potential for this is enormous, and the proposal is to start with the county buildings. 5% savings for the county would total over $30,000 a year in savings. and which is over a year and a half, would more than pay for the request that we've made for the $40,000, which has been recommended by Joe. You put this across the entire county, and we're talking about millions of dollars. And this network that we'd be establishing is essentially one that once it's installed, all it takes then is for a building to put in a meter themselves, but they have access then to the network, a secure access to the network, and they can start monitoring their energy efficiency or their energy use in their own buildings. The over-target requests that were not supported by the recommended budget are were our top priorities. The operations manager position, as I said, we've squeezed about as much as we can out of our out of our administrative staff, and what we are would like to do is to have an operations manager who would essentially work with all of our systems, all of our administrative systems, all our operations, to develop systems so that, and then look for greater efficiencies and increase the ability for all of us to do our work better. The funding for that, what we're asking for is $30,000 in target money and $30,000 in one-time money. So the intention here is that over time, we would ask for the county to cover half the cost of that position, more or less permanently. The other half is something that we would reduce our request for each year as we increase our efficiency, as we increase our own, we expect to see increased revenue as a result of this because program staff will be more effective. That other half of the funds needed to pay for that position would come from new revenue that we'd be generating in the association. It's the same approach we've been using all along, and it's been a way for us to grow our capacity and still not cost the county that much money. The second one is the $16,000 target request for restoration of the agriculture leader position to full time. That position was reduced to 75% time with the cut in the county appropriation after the financial crash, and I'll show you here. So in 2009, our target appropriation from the county was about $710,000. After the crash, it went down to about $615,000. It's been inching back up over the past years. And it's today the target is in 2018 is going to be somewhere around $680,000. If we had taken the 2009 and just adjusted for inflation, which has been about 14% over that, 7, 8, 9 years, I can't subtract it to the moment. But anyway, the point is that yellow line, that yellow square there, represents the inflation adjustment. So if we were to if we had had our county appropriation in 2009, just had it adjusted each year for inflation, we'd be receiving about $815,000 this year in 2018. We're at 680, which is roughly $135,000 less. Our request for the target funding for both of those is about one-third of that $135,000. So we're not asking for the $140,000. We're asking for $40,000 or $45,000. That's the other part to take in it, and the other reason for asking for this operations manager position is this: our revenues, our participants, our staff numbers have all gone up. You know, when I started back in 2003. Our budget was about $1.8 million. It's over now. It's four times that in 2016. It'll be higher this year. Our participant numbers have gone up a lot during that time, basically from 24,000 to, in 2016, 66,000. And our FTEs for staff have more than doubled. Furthermore, the staff are, you know, our numbers of staff are way higher than they were. You know, we used to be about 100. We're now sort of fully staffed in the summertime, it's over 350 staff. So it's a complicated organization. frankly, I'm not sure that anybody else would want this job. And so part of this is designed to basically make the position, the sort of leadership positions on the admin side, something that would be attractive to somebody else if they wanted to apply for this position. So that's I think that's it. Yes.
A question for Ken.
Yes.
Dan and Rich and Martha.
I have questions about several of the OTRs. I did not understand the explanation of OTR 13, Program Assistance for Youth Development and Family and Community. Can you do that one again?
Yeah, so the Program Assistance is basically it's to have somebody who takes on some of the tasks that the leadership in 4-H, 4-H Youth Development currently or had been doing. So last year we asked for $19,500 in one-time money, with the intention being that in this year we would ask for $13,000 if this worked. So the idea is to move us down to zero for this position eventually, and the program assistance, we can do that by freeing up time for Megan, for other people who are in leadership positions in 4-H, to develop relationships, write new proposals, generate other revenue.
Is it an administrative assistant position, or is it a program position, or?
It's essentially serving. In part, it's been some program assistance, and in part, it's been administrative assistance. It's been both. It's been tasks that somebody who's paid less could do, and that would free up significant amounts of time of the senior staff, who would be more capable of writing proposals that would be successful.
Okay, thank you. Another question about OTR 11, the operations manager position. Is there a job description written up for that, or a tentative one?
There is a tentative job position and job description written. Yeah.
Can you send that around tomorrow?
Sure.
Thank you. And my last question was about the next one, OTR 12, restoration of the agricultural leader position. Just to be clear, when you say that the position was reduced to 75%, 8 years ago or so, I mean, the legislature, correct me if I'm wrong, the legislature didn't reduce that position. The legislature...
No, we did.
Okay.
Yeah. With a $120,000 cut in funding, we made decisions about what we were going to do. In this case, we were able to do that because, as you know, there's a certain person who works there as the leadership, as the program leader in agriculture, who would probably work for free. But she's also really close to retirement. So part of the reason we are asking for this is because we won't be able to afford a full-time position, and it will be very difficult to fill that position if it's not full-time.
Thank you.
Yeah. Rich, you had your hand up.
I did.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Ken. Could you go back to the real-time energy monitoring? And is this electrical equipment that you bring around to the building, or is it all?
It's installed on the meter. There's several components to this. In the building, it's actually a meter. It's a meter that is installed in line at the box, and it's installed by an electrician. The total average cost for the installation plus the meter is about $450 now, which is why we focused on commercial buildings and so on, because if a 5% savings for them would be sufficient to more than cover the cost. The meter catches the data. That data is actually transmitted with low range radio waves to a receiving, what's called a gateway. That gateway is, and in this county, for us to establish gateways or to have a network that covers all of the county, we think it's going to take about 75 gateways. Those gateways, each one is connected to the internet, but those are the only ones that are connected to the internet. And because there's only 75, you can make those connections quite secure. The data that gets transmitted is double key encrypted. So the only people who can actually access the data are the people with the key. And that key is owned by the building owner in this case. So the data gets transmitted to the gateway. It goes up into the cloud. The only people who can access it are the people who own the transmitter, own the data. And then you can pick it up off the cloud, off your smartphone.
So when you get the data, how do you save the money?
So you save the money by figuring out what the issue is. And so in our case, in the case of the people who've done this work so far, it's basically sitting down and saying, so where is the issue? Is it
an issue? Is a spike?
What's causing the spike in our case? So we were seeing spikes and sort of it's like, what's causing the spike? And then you can begin to isolate it and then figure it out. We're actually partnering with Cornell to do machine learning on this. So eventually figuring that out will also become automatic. So that's the intention.
Is there anything in, if you get this system up and running, that it couldn't be used on residential?
The only issue with it on residential is, again, would be, it could be used. Yeah, the cost of the meter.
But yes. So once you put that $450 in there, you could use this anywhere.
Yep. Okay. It also, by the way, so we're focusing on energy here, but the network can actually be used for anything that you want to measure. So, in fact, our intentions are, we actually are using it now. We've set this up. We're monitoring in real time aquaculture chambers in Taiwan from here. And by the way, when Mike was talking about ingenuity and local ingenuity, I was thinking, yes, I mean, this stuff that's what we're working on is basically the result of a couple of guys here in Tompkins County who've been at the forefront of working on this this stuff. They also happen to be in New York City, so this is some of this, what they're working on here is simultaneously taking place in New York City, and they're now being flown all over the world to consult with a number of other places to set this up elsewhere. So
thank you.
Anyone else?
On the energy, is this basically a smart meter?
It's smarter than a smart meter. the smart meters, there's two really key pieces with this. Actually, more than two, but I'll stick with two. One is that you can set this to measure as frequently as every 5 or 10 seconds if you want to, right? It's real time, and with NYSEG's meters, the smart meters, they've set this basically to collect every 15 minutes. The second thing that's really critical is that the data is not owned by NYSEG. The data is owned by the building owner. And as some of you know, we've really struggled to get data from NYSEG to do a number of different modeling things that we thought would be really useful for the county. This will allow this to happen. And related to that is when this information is actually cycled through, we can actually sign, for people who want to use this, we can develop user agreements that allow all this information to be aggregated and be accessible, only be used by researchers who might be working on something around the common good. So this issue with machine learning, for example, gives us, if this was NYSEG's data, we would not have access to do this kind of machine learning that will help individual building owners quickly figure out what the issue is in their thing. This way we can do that.
You said you're the second largest cooperative extension in the state?
We're the second largest in the state, probably the second largest in the country. Yeah.
So which counties do you, when you say that?
Well, I mean, in terms of number of staff and programming and budget.
Oh, not that you serve the most counties. It's just...
Oh, we only serve this county. Well, we
that's what I thought.
Yeah.
Okay.
But there are 3,300 counties in the U.S., and from what we can see, there's only one other county that's bigger than ours.
Who is it?
It's Suffolk, which only has 50 times the population that we do. So,
on the positions, the ag leader. So you've asked for target. You want to build this back up and have this in your budget to be ready for retirement. Okay. Are we not allowed to ask who that is?
Who the person is that's currently in that position?
Yeah.
It's Monica Roth.
Oh, okay. All right. Oh, you're right. She would do it for free. Hi, Monica.
Don't get any ideas, please.
We just mean you love your job. And do it really, really, really well. And then the operations manager, you see that as, but you're at, I see you're half time.
Well, it's a full-time position. We're intending it to be full-time.
Okay. And then you're seeing, so I see a description on, in our book on page 6 in this section. The person would focus on systems and could you just describe a little bit what the difference is? How would that change your job?
There is not enough time in my job to do. So basically, the systems part is to go through, for example, look through the entire process of hiring, from position description development to onboarding of somebody, and actually even before that, the pool development. In terms of candidate pool development, so that when we are advertising for a position, we have the ability to tap into a large number of people who would actually want to come work for us. So it's looking through every one of those steps and saying, how are we doing it now? How could we make it better? How could we do it also and document it in such a way that when somebody new shows up in the association, it's transparent for them. It's easy for them to understand how to do it. One of the things with the nonprofit, you know, there's a fair amount of turnover. Part of the issue around productivity and efficiency is that you have to basically retrain people. But if we have systems that are well designed and transparent, so it's HR, it's finance, it's all of those particular efforts. And we have a number of ones that we've already identified as the highest priority to start with. And that, you know, we anticipate that it's going to take 3 to 4 years for that, with a strong focus on systems, to actually get those in place and get everybody trained and up to speed for all the systems we have in place here in the county, in the association.
Okay, and then Joe, you're saying this was, you said no to this one. No, you said yes to this one, no to the ag program leader,
that's
right?
That's right.
Okay. Got it.
All right.
Thanks, Ken.
Julie? Yeah, I called your name.
How is your building space?
I was looking with MV at the Tompkins County Public Library space. How's that? We're tight.
Yes, you are.
We have, I mean, there's... I don't want to go into a huge amount of detail. We do have design for an expansion. Prior to doing that, and the expansion includes the use of shipping containers as a way of going about it. It sounds terrible, but it looks really nice. I've actually been in a shipping container that's been redone, and it's not bad. But we want to make sure that staff in general agree with it, feel that way. So we are testing. We are basically planning to put in what we call a dirty classroom, a classroom for gardening and composting, along with some storage, to test out the concept first. And if that works, if staff like it, then we would proceed with the expansion using shipping containers.
On the site you're at now?
On the site that we are at now, yeah. And the expansion would basically, part of the reason for the shipping containers is we can elevate that and actually still keep the parking underneath. And then to Mike's point about solar panels, we'd put solar panels on top of that, so we'd actually have 3 uses instead of just 2.
Well,
Ken, thank you for this. I had not realized how large the extension was relative to others, but I had the pleasure of being on the board for a number of years, and I'm always amazed at all you do. And I'm delighted that you're finally coming to us with this proposal for an operations manager, because you talked about one of your employees would work for free. I know you are effectively doing that much of the time just from the hours you put in, and I would hope this would give you some relief.
I'm beginning to feel like a legislator. Speaking of working for free. No.
So the amount being asked, though, is relatively small, and I know that that's because Cornell picks up the fringe. Can you remind us as to how much that plays in terms of adding the value to whatever position?
It's, you know, the benefits package that we can access because we're part of Cooperative Extension is valued at 56%. So we have we actually have the New York State retirement system for staff who actually qualify for that, which is any staff who works 20 hours a week or more, and we have health insurance that's the same packages that are offered through Cornell. It is not a Cornell benefit, though. I want to be clear. It's not. It's a benefit that comes from New York State. So we still pay Cornell.
Anyone else?
Thank you.
Ken, I would like to ask you that if there would be another time that you could meet with us to talk about your contract agencies. Is that something we can arrange?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
We will be in touch with you. Any other questions for Ken? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Look at all these pages for administration.
Oh, you're going to hate this.
Contingent fund, county administration, capital program. Whatever.
I'm going to run it from here.
Better be good. It's late.
There's an old, slightly off-color joke that has a punchline. I know what I'm supposed to do, but I don't know how to make it interesting. And I feel kind of like that right now. At the end of this very long list of presentations and lots of numbers and things. But I have a lot to present tonight, so be patient. I have three or four different things: the administration budget, stop DWI, contingency, and capital. So I'll do this as concisely as I can. I'm thinking with some nostalgia, this may be my last budget PowerPoint. So, you know, we'll have to do something with this.
That made me slightly nauseous.
Gearing up, Joe.
This is the county administration budget. The total budget, as you can see, is a little over $900,000. It's up slightly from last year, 1.3% from last year. The revenues you see here are room tax revenues. We take a little bit of room tax revenue to support our costs helping to administer that. In terms of how it breaks down, you've seen this from a lot of departments. We're labor-intensive. Almost 80% of all of our spending comes in personnel. There are some relatively large non-personnel items in here that I'll very quickly go through. So the basic composition of personnel, non-personnel breaks out that way. And the non-personnel items, if you want to know what's in that account, there are a lot of little things, but there are also some handful of larger things in there that explain some of that budget. The new performance measurement initiative is in there at $53,000. We pay for the broadcast of your sessions through our budget, Cooperative Extension. And there's a boost in that this year you'll see in an OTR, although I think that's a request. It's not in the recommendation. But that's a part of our budget. Next year, the climate survey will be a part of our budget. Community outreach worker, this is the contribution we make to the city to support the community outreach worker project. I think this is the third year we've done that. We've centralized the cost of providing translation and interpretation services as a part of our limited English proficiency program. That's in our budget. We support the WDIC. There's an allocation of nearly $15,000 in this budget. And then the new budgeting system is also supported in our non-personnel lines. Which is a major influences for 2018. Many of them are carryovers, jail ATI, reentry initiatives. I expect that will continue to be a dominant issue as we move into 2018. Labor negotiations, I wish I could tell you that we won't be involved in them next year. I hope we don't, but we probably will be involved in labor negotiations. We'll continue the performance measurement initiative and shared service initiatives. The workplace climate survey will occupy a fair amount of our time next year, and we'll do it right. And, of course, succession will also be a part of the agenda for 2018. In terms of the size of our office, we're at seven. We've been at seven for the last couple of years. The bump last year was the compliance position. I will be talking about some additional prospective positions as we get to the OTRs, as we will right now. The OTRs that are supported in the budget, they've been funded. The performance measurement system, you recall this was expected to be a three-year rollout of performance measures, and it will be. This is the second of the 3 years that's a part of this budget. And then the climate survey, a $30,000 expense to do it again, do it as well as we did the first time. It's a $30,000 expense. The survey itself, I think, will be given sometime in the early part of next year, probably February or March. That's in as a one-time OTR. Things that I put in there as requests, but didn't put money behind it. You'll recognize the first one. We've talked about this one a lot over the last little while, and that's the criminal justice coordinator. We've put it in the administration budget. It seems to be the right place to locate that position. Many of you recall that there was such a thing in county administration not that long ago. The idea is to bring it back. It's identified as a multi-year. The way I've looked at it, I think pulling out a CGR, call it an 18-month term. I know that it was a jail study where we talked about maybe that wants to go to a three-year arrangement, similar to the Energy Navigator and the approach that was taken there. The next item that's also not new, Paul has been talking about this for the past 6 months or so. It's also multi-year money. It's the Public Administration Fellowship Program. For those of you who have heard the presentation, and we've got additional information if you'd like it, this is generally an effort to try to widen the intake pipe to bring talented people into our government from academia with graduate degrees, probably master's degrees, and let them spend 18 months here in a kind of a mid-level management position, rotate through the government over that 18-month period, helping us with new ideas and new talent, helping them to develop an experience in local government. Often these short-term internships can find their way into long-term career opportunities for people that we would like to work for the county. Recognizing that college classes are probably more diverse, a more diverse pool than maybe what we can get just through civil service, we also think this is a way to help diversify over time our workforce. This program would run 3 years. Each intern would have an 18-month term, and we can talk about that in greater detail if you'd like. And the last item on this page is the sequential intercept mapping program. This relates to reentry. It's an approach to look at, have we coordinated the various services that are available to individuals coming out of jail, and where are the gaps in those services? It will be very helpful as we converge on this problem with a lot of new initiatives and programs. A couple more. We've put into our requests. One is we're recognizing that the AV system in this building is getting oldish. It's 5 years old. We really need to start putting money aside to repair things when they break. So we put $14,000 into an OTR that would be available for that, an ongoing maintenance fund for the AV system in this room. And the last item that we've requested, because nobody else wanted to, is the STIRB membership. And I know PDAC has talked about this. It's a $10,000 item to rejoin the Southern Tier Regional Planning and Development Board. And I think that's received a fair amount of support in committee. So those are the OTRs that are in my budget. Just highlighting the things that relate to personnel, the criminal justice coordinator, the public administration fellows, The other thing that's, that you don't see in here, you will see it as I get into the contingency budget. The budget includes an over-target request that is priced at a deputy-level position that would be available for the legislature and the next administrator to use as you all think about how do you want to organize the Department of Administration. I think you know that since I've been here, I've tried to really tighten the belt, maybe too tight, in terms of the staffing for this office. I think there's probably a model organization that needs one more senior-level position if you're really going to get a good span of control over the departments. So as opposed to creating a position and me telling my successors and the next legislature what to do, there's funds in the contingent account, if you approve it, that would give you the capacity to create a position that is at the deputy level, the deputy administrator level, and that would be a target position. So that's county administration. And I'm, if you want, I can just do stop DWI quickly, or I can take questions now also on that part of the budget.
You want to do a question now?
I could.
Go ahead, Mark.
Yeah. So the fellows would be two people, sequentially one and then the other?
Over staggered. They'd be staggered. So the first one would start and the next one would come in, I believe, 6 months later. So there'd be a period of overlap between
them. So they'd overlap, but okay. And what kind of projects would they work on?
There is general, you know, research and planning and analysis projects, policy development projects. You've got a lot going on as a result of your jail study that I have a feeling you could, you know, use a fellow or two to work out in that area. We've got some ongoing shared services initiatives. I mean, I think that there's plenty of projects to go around. And there's talking with those department heads that would look to host a fellow just to see what, you know, special initiative they might have.
Oh, so you're saying not necessarily both of them in admin?
No. Actually, what we were proposing is that there would be a core project directed by what we call a host department. That's not to say county administration couldn't be a host department. Mm-hmm. But what we're also proposing is that all of the fellows have an opportunity to do a brief rotation through county administration as well as our finance department so that they get a well-rounded experience in terms of what county operations is like.
So that makes me wonder where all these people are going to sit.
That's a great question.
Well, you're going to get new chairs, right? So they're going to sit around your table?
It is an unanswered question, but it's a good question because we're pretty squeezed where we are.
Right.
Yeah. I don't have an answer.
Okay, especially, you know, I mean, especially the deputy level manager. I can imagine the criminal justice coordinator being somewhere else or and the interns, but okay.
Yeah. I mean there's a little bit of an inspiration. I don't know if anybody has been to the finance department over the last month or two, but they have a new office landscaped scheme there that has taken the same amount of space that we have. And they've really made good use of it. And there might be a need for something like that to happen in our office.
So I would say if we did this sort of thing, we'd have to put some money in contingency for some kind of reconfiguration.
Right. Okay. Well, pragmatically, if you put this amount of money aside, I don't know that you're going to hire somebody on January 1st. Mm-hmm. So if you fully fund the position but you don't hire until March 1st, you're going to have some capacity to do that kind of furnishing work.
And in fact, especially the deputy manager, the deputy administrator, whatever, you probably really want the new administrator
Absolutely.
To hire.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Dan, and then Mike Lane.
I have a couple of questions about the OTRs. So OTR 18, criminal justice coordinator. That's what you said you envision an 18-month? This is the CGR recommend, sort of a person overseeing all these projects coming out. Okay. And then OTR 20, you said is a reentry person. Is that correct? Did you say that? Sorry. Sequential intercept method.
Oh, I'm sorry. That's not a position. That's a project.
It's a project.
It is a process. So it would likely involve a consultant. And there is kind of a system that's applied to be able to look at all of these services that are being offered in the community, kind of stack them up, see if we're bumping into each other, see if we work to coordinate, see where the gaps are. So it's not a person, it's a project.
So it's a project to look at all the reentry programs that exist. Is it a little more than that or not?
Could be some mental health programs that kind of overlap, things that touch on reentry. Could be factored in here too. We've looked at it as a tool for the new criminal justice coordinator and something that probably is going to involve CJATI in trying to, you know, fill in all the blanks in this study.
I'm sorry, I still don't quite get. So it's focused on the reentry issue.
Yeah.
And it's a tool, it's a program, it's a consultant, it's what?
It's all of those.
Okay.
It's all of those things. So a consultant would come in and work with all of the providers in the community and really map out who does what. What's the service provided? What's the population served? Okay. All of those things. And through that mapping process, that's when you start to understand, are you duplicating efforts? Are there gaps in the system and so forth? It's a finite thing. It occurs over the course of a short period.
Okay.
Originally, we had asked for a grant to be able to pay for it. And at that, I think it was a few days that they talked about of convening a group and putting this together.
Okay. And what about that name? Where did that come from? Sequential? I can't get it. Sequential intercept mapping.
It is a term of... It's not a term of art. It's a term that's used in this field. It came from mental health. So originally, Sharon McDougall is the one that brought it to the table. So I think it's a tool or a process used probably in that field more frequently than other fields. So that's where it came from.
I think that's part of why I'm having trouble grasping what it actually means.
You know what? I'll bring it. I gave it to Anna. There's a one-pager that Sharon did when it's first presented, and I'll get that out tomorrow.
Thank you.
Yep.
Mike Klein.
Two things. One, I'm glad to see your request for some money for the AV to be put away, because that equipment is expensive, and when it goes, it goes. The other thing was really Martha asked my question about space, and I think it really points out that, yes, we didn't have a need for a whole center of government building. But we're trying to get back on track with positions and new programs that we're thinking about. And people are going to have some offices. And we're going to have to do some leasing, or we're going to have to do some building, or we're going to have to do some reorganization and perhaps moving something out to the health department, extra space out there, something like that. So I think it's a really important question, Martha.
Rich.
The criminal justice coordinator position, is the number you're showing for 12 months or 18?
12. That's a 12. So that's the cost in 2018.
Okay.
Yep.
Joe, we haven't really, do we have a job description for that?
No.
Okay.
No. I mean, we can look at Bill Benjamin's old job description. That's probably the starting point.
Okay.
Work from there.
Any other questions about the early part of the county administration? Martha?
Well, since these two pieces are part of the response to CGR, and with the decision by the commission the other day, and then email traffic that we've had about, I guess it was Mike's suggestion to speed things up, certain things. I mean, get some things started, like
this year,
hiring, especially the hiring process takes time. I guess this is maybe a question for you, Jim, about like organizing our voting, and maybe some time can be spent figuring out which things to to put in the hopper up front, so and like this, and so they're not necessarily they're in all different departments. You know, the CGR stuff is all spread out. So, okay. And I'm just thinking out loud, is all. Isn't that fun? Okay.
Anyone else? Page two.
Stop DWI is a part of our office, so it has a pretty simple budget. It's self-supporting. The budget is $319,000. It's up a little bit. It's up $20,000 over the year before, but that simply reflects a state grant that will be coming for education. So that's what you see in both the expenses and revenues side of this budget. About half of what's spent here is for personnel, and I'll give you a little flavor of that. The rest of it's for, obviously, non-personnel. The FTEs here, there are two altogether, one of whom is in my office. The other one, it's really the sum of two things, there it is, are in the DA's office. So all of you know Michelle Lansing. She's in my office. She's essentially the coordinator of the program. But then these dollars help support a little bit of the cost of a criminal investigator and a fair amount of the cost of a secretary paralegal over there that does a lot of the processing of fine notices and so forth, works very closely with Stop DWI on administrative processes. In the non-personnel area, you can see what it's where the money goes. It's broken down in two basic areas. The $66,000 goes largely to law enforcement to do roadblocks, things like that, that are aimed at reducing DWI. The rest of it is for supplies and equipment, breathalyzers, those kinds of things that that are used in the enforcement of the program. I think that's basically it for the Stop DWI program.
Any questions about Stop DWI? Page three.
Contingent.
I had a question about space.
About what?
The housing of this administration.
Oh, please use your microphone.
The housing of this administration. What other options are there?
It could go some other place. It is a part of my office, and it makes sense to have her there. You know, she occupies kind of a corner of the office, so it could be moved to some other place. If, for example, if some of the positions that we've asked for come in, that could be considered.
Yes. Well, I would be interested to know what those options are, sooner rather than later. This
okay.
has come up before, and
yeah,
this is my last chance to ask, so I'm going to ask.
I don't know if you're also talking about administrative responsibility over this operation or if you're just talking about real estate, where it would be located.
Both.
Okay.
I know where it's
I can
office.
I can write down a couple of options, but sure.
Mike.
Real quick, I had always thought that was supposed to be like a self-sustaining program. Like, it was supposed to be paid for with the...
It is.
Oh, it is.
It is. Yeah, that was the first slide.
Oh,
so it's fully covered by its revenues.
Well, build on Dooley's question. It's not intuitively obvious why that needs to be an administration. I could imagine, for example, it being at health... or some other place. So I would be interested in thoughts if that would free up
sure.
space. But if there's some compelling reason why it should be linked to
okay.
administration, please.
So I'll give that thought over the next couple of days.
I might see probation or DA as other options.
Do we have to solve that problem now?
Yeah.
I mean, it's obvious why the office is there, right?
Yes.
Everybody understands that?
Yes.
Okay, I think we have some time to solve the problem. All
right. Contingent fund, usually we don't spend much time on contingent fund, but you know there's a fairly large allocation of money in the contingency this year. Begins with a baseline, kind of the ongoing amount of $863,000, but then to that has been added about $1.3 million. So the total contingent fund is in the $2.2 million range for 2018. We've already talked about why that came to be. It's basically the amount that's available and for application to OTRs and still stay within a 2.4% levy. So there are some options you have on contingency. You can direct all of the extra funding to OTRs. Now, if you did that, if you allocated $1.36 million to the OTRs that are in there, it would keep the levy right at 2.4%, which is where we set our target back in April. You just keep in the contingent account. I don't think you want to do that, but you could. It would have the same effect. It would keep the levy at 2.4%. It would be a hedge against risk at a time that we know that there are some substantial risks out there. Another option is you could just eliminate it. You could take it out of the budget. If you did that, it would lower the levy to less than 1%, 0.4% over the 2017 levy. And then you could do some of both. Kind of the master of the obvious here. But as you think about those kinds of things, your rule of thumb is that for every $480,000 that's cut as opposed to redirected or reserved, that lowers the levy by 1%. So that's how it appears. It appears as a funded OTR, $1,362,000, and that's how you can use it. It's there to address your legislative priorities. There are some things that we've presented as OTRs as contingent items in here. So beyond that $1,362,000, some other things in there. The first one I already talked about. This is where the money would be for that additional position. And the idea is you're going to want to know what this is before you release the funds. And so it stays in contingency until there's a plan developed, then it comes out of contingency and it pays those bills. That's number one. The second item in here is much smaller. It's $10,000. And that would allow us to continue working with the city on some parks studies and planning. You know, we spent some time looking at the lakefront parks, especially Stewart. This would allow us to keep contributing to that effort. And the last item on here is simply you may want to increase the baseline contingency. This would basically say we're going to raise the baseline contingent budget by $150,000 because we live in riskier times. And you can, that's in there as an OTR proposal, and I think I've suggested that that be funded. So that's a short walk through the contingency.
Rich?
I just had a math question. If you're at $960,000 equals 2%, you're saying that if we eliminated the extra funding of the 1.3, we'd be at 0.4% over.
Yeah.
Wouldn't that be reducing $960,000?
It would. It's so late, my brain isn't working on
the arithmetic. I'm saying if 480 is 1%,
right.
2% is 960.
Yes.
But you're saying if you eliminated the 1.3 million, you'd reduce by 2%. And I didn't understand that.
Okay.
And change.
Let me work on the arithmetic. Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
I need a clearer head to be able to work through that.
Okay.
Arithmetic.
Mark.
There's usually something in contingency for board outs, or is it in the sheriff's or jail budget?
It's in the sheriff's, and it has been for some time now. It's in the sheriff's budget. I recall it's $140,000, and I think that would support somewhere around 4 to 5 board outs.
So what?
An average daily board out number of 4 to 5.
So you're saying that's already in the budget in the sheriff's department, sheriff's budget. So if we had to put money away in case we have more board outs, if the variances go away, where does that come from? Would that go here or would that go to the sheriff's office?
You probably want to keep it back here. You probably want to keep it in contingency and let it be drawn down as the actual experience is known. Mm-hmm. And then in 2019, you'll have a better sense of what's going on with that. And you can move it to the sheriff's budget in the following year.
Okay. And you said the other night that if we just had to pay for 18, because that's what our number, if that's what the variances are, that's 568 or something?
558.
558. Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions? Joe? Final comment, Joe?
No, but I've got the capital yet to do. And I'm reading my audience. Okay. You want me to do a quick trip through?
Yeah, sure. Absolutely. Before I start, and at the end, Kevin and I have talked at the beginning of this meeting about the process that we will try to use in the amendment thing, you know, kind of related to what Martha was just talking about how we organize what we're going to do. But then Kevin will speak about that at the end of the meeting. Go ahead, Joe.
Okay. I'm going to go really quickly through here.
Yes?
I am fading. Maybe no one else is. I don't see why we need to race through our voting meetings if we could have a presentation of this at the beginning of the whatever the next expanded budget committee.
No, there are no more expanded budget committee meetings.
Well, but because they're called voting meetings. But we could do that with this presentation.
Julie, we added one meeting this year.
Yes.
And we had the same number of departments that we had last year.
Yes, but here
and,
we are.
And the last couple of meetings have taken a significant amount of time.
Yes.
And I frankly do not want to add anything to the voting meeting. If the rest of you want to, let me know and we'll do it. Martha?
I'm looking at there are a lot of pages here. I'm fading too. I wouldn't mind starting off the first voting meeting with 10 minutes on this or 15. I mean,
everyone agree?
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. And most of us. I mean, I'm fading as well.
So this wasn't my last PowerPoint.
No, it is not. All right. The first voting meeting is October 10th. Followed by the 12th and the 16th. We have a forum, 7 o'clock, October 2nd, here. And Kevin, let's talk a little bit about the amendment process.
I think the best way to do it, based on our experience together over the last few years, is probably something like a case-by-case basis. I've sometimes sent out a spreadsheet, and not everybody is that format doesn't suit everybody. So I think whether you reach me by email or phone, I will try to. It's really my job to translate your intent into an amendment. So I hope you'll be patient. I'll probably have to ask you a few questions to make sure to clarify and make sure that what I'm putting into the spreadsheet for our work together really does reflect your intent. And my questions would be everything from if you say I want to fund X OTR and just tell me an OTR number, I'll want to probably verify that we're talking about the same amount and the same OTR. And it will get more complex if you say I want to add a new target OTR. Then the question is how much, and whether you envision that be the target being a transfer of the target authority that's parked as part of that 1.3 in contingent fund, or whether you want to do something else. So I think given the complexity of this year's budget and the fact that we all work sort of differently, I will try to work with each individual person who contacts me about amendments and try to make sure that we're getting the right thing in the spreadsheet from you. Are there any suggestions in a different direction?
Kevin, I think you have a fair amount of time. And, you know, I think we've done this before, and there's not a whole lot of difference in this budget except we have a large amount in contingency, and there seems to be focused on
the CGR recommendation, blah, 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 you know. So, Martha.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. If you could package what?
What?
I mean, if we could start out with that as a package, the things that Joe.
Yeah, I mean, don't talk to me, talk to him. I don't do them.
The things that you put together in your list, it was in your budget presentation, right. Your first PowerPoint. Say these are kind of in the public safety. They're not just in all the different departments, but they're related to the same issue. So I guess I would like to see, maybe the first meeting, we really look at all of those together.
Kevin.
Now, if that means that mental health comes for just, say, two positions, and then later they come back for other things that they've asked for, then I would be willing to do it that way.
Let me interrupt one. Joe, you're on schedule for the 10th for your last part on the budget. What are you looking at time-wise? 30 minutes? 20 minutes?
20.
Okay. Kevin.
I was just going to say that exactly what Martha was suggesting is why Joe organized that spreadsheet that's
right.
Primarily blue and white is designed to give you packages or bundles like that.
Anyone else? Questions, comments for Kevin or Joe or Paula or Marcia or Greg? Thank you very much. See you on, Monday at 7:00.